Yeah. It's a glorious thing.
Yeah. It takes a long time to sit in a chair and watch your garden, right, bloom in real time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened to me last night.
Uh-huh.
I had a very interesting night. I woke up in the middle of the night, and for some reason, these ideas pop into my head. I started thinking about string theory for some reason. And the next thing I knew, what came to me was all of the talks that we've had that had to do with nothing.
Yeah.
For the first time, I had a really true sense of what that was.
Wow.
And the experience that I had was again similar to the one that I had described to you about a week ago.
Right.
Except this time I was woken up from a sound sleep and then lied in my bed for the next hour. Just feeling this, it's very hard to describe, but it was like a me without the personality.
Yeah.
And I just kind of felt this, I kind of felt the element of time, the idea of time kind of drifting away.
Wow. Nice. Right.
So, I feel kind of uncomfortable describing it because I don't really, right now I'm kind of speaking from a very reflexive and reflective place. It's kind of hard to pinpoint what it was that was happening to me, but
sure, yeah.
Happening.
I think that it sneaks up on you. You know, you get an invitation like that and something says, okay, wake up, dude. I have something I need to share with you. And you're like, you know, okay, what's up? And then the universe just says, well, check this out, motherfucker. And you're like, well, fuck me. That's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You know, thanks for the call.
That comes very close. That comes very close.
I mean, spaceless, timeless is, you know, can we argue or suggest it's present. Spaceless, timeless is present. Each gesture, each moment, each feeling, each thought, each sensation appears as an entirety and leaves no residue of itself, and nothing has a lasting nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, our habit is to presume the universe, ourselves, the earth, the atmosphere, our body, our mind, to be of a durable, sustaining nature.
Mm.
When the observable revelation is, oh my goodness, each luscious gesture of subjective nature is unbelievable. And that invitation or subtlety permits us to see with a greater degree of confidence than perhaps we've ever had that time and space are myth. The lusciousness is reality, that it has no duration or durability, and that it's not actually appearing in a place is strange beyond imagination.
Mm.
You can't refuse it, or we would be a fool to even attempt to refuse it.
I also think I appreciated the part of the conversation that you guys were having a little while ago about, you know, other teachers and how they present themselves. And I mean, I've had a lot of experiences like that as well. With the participants that go to those kind of workshops and gatherings that, in a way, I could say that it impresses me that people attend these, most people seem to attend these kinds of gatherings to be a better body.
Yes.
When in actuality, I feel at this time I'm coming to be a nobody.
Well, yes, this is it. Let's just say it's about time for all of us. We let's say are lured by the bizarre promise of something as strange as self-realization in hopes that it will ameliorate the imagination of our suffering as a body, as a mind, as a victim of symptoms, right? As an insufferable recipient of circumstances and events and nonstop grief and nonstop panic. And, you know, as we travel down this path, those motives of trying to ameliorate our irritabilities go away. We're not in this any longer for the amelioration or resolution of the imagination of suffering. We actually become more, call it, positively interested in the revelatory nature of reality than negatively motivated by attempting to avoid or salve or ameliorate suffering. It's a very significant shift.
Yeah.
There's no question. It's not like we're no longer pining for something. We are invited to discover the unmitigated nourishment of ourselves. And this is the great ruination. That's a whole different, you know, kettle of fish when it comes to discovery, yoga, inquiry, Vipassana, Advaita, right? This discovery of the positive or radiant nature of being is what's capturing our affinity and our loyalty, not the displacement of unwanted suffering.
And what's remarkable is that is enough.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Yeah, we might find that the mere interest and affection that we have for the curious and transcendent nature of present experience is more than enough. We're no longer interested or pushed around by preferred outcomes in the myth of what we call our life. We've left behind the reflex of being a sufferer of symptoms.
One idea that just came to me, I don't know why, is it seems as if we're no longer trying to solidify the ethereal nature of reality.
Yes, yes, yes. When mind or reference making particularizes reality into circumstances and events in justifications, explanations, and outcomes, that is an attempt to solidify pure, unadulterated chaos. You could say very unruly and misbehaved chaos.
Right.
But chaos in the personal sense, though.
That's although, right.
Although it might seem that way at times, but.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. No, the chaos we're referring to, you know, some people might call love.
Hmm.
Some people might call the sacred, ineffable divine. And so it's, you know, maybe we're lucky enough to begin to organically and effortlessly refrain from attempting to make chaos our bitch. Because if you are such a fucking idiot that you're trying to make chaos your bitch, you know, you're just a suffering asshole from hell. What does it take to see that? Chaos is our best friend. You know, if you have a poetic physicist talk about the observations or the nature of a proton at the center of an atom, you know, they'll use words like unruly, irrational, chaos, that resolves to nothing and does not obey relativity. And so if we're looking into the, you know, the heart of atomic structure and we see that it is disobedient, unruly, irrational, fantastic chaos, disobeying the imaginary boundary of time-space, then the entirety of object permutation is clearly dreaming. Why would you waste even an instant trying to make that magnificence your bitch? You'd be much smarter just to lie down and take it. I think that's, you know, the look of liberation on the face of a Ramana Maharshi is like, you know, he's like, hey, man, this shit rocks. I'm not going to fuck with it.
Get the diaper on.
Yeah, really. Has anybody got a clean diaper? What are we having for lunch? Peacock? Roast peacock and tri-tip. Oof. The revelation of what this is as it is presently appearing and expressing itself unabashedly is unutterably transhuman. And so we, you know, get a feel for it, and we're no longer walking around lamenting about the petty suffering that may or may not be appearing in the imagination of our life. That's just not what's holding our attention or affection any longer. And of course, that's a very bold departure, right, from the conformity of the primate prevailing hysteria.
Would you say that there is one thing that I'm trying to understand is what I would call the possible hide-and-seek nature of reality? Is it proven or is it true that what we observe wouldn't exist if we didn't observe it?
Yeah, well, you see, then what's happening is the what we call mind as a profound city of measure and comparison can imagine that this is, it's possible for this to be other than itself, or that it is dependent on its own permutation to be witnessing to its grandeur. And there's not two things here, right? The lusciousness of your present experience, completely transcendent of the imaginary boundary field of time-space, is an unimaginable and unfracturable unicity. Even though it can appear that you have a sovereign subjective nature to whom, you know, objects or phenomena are appearing or occurring. But what if the permutation, the perception, the awareness, and the bizarre expressiveness of a radiance going nowhere is not other than itself? And so it is not dependent upon anyone or anything being observant.
You could say that it's indifferent to being observed.
Yes.
The magic is that we get to think we're experiencing that.
That's right. It's a magic trick that this appears as if that I am in possession of a discrete subjective nature, perceiving the grandeur of expressive reality. But that's, it's a myth, not an easy myth to jettison. But your presence, call it that, is automatically with no effort, without reference. You didn't do this. You didn't sign up. You didn't pick items from a menu.
Right? It didn't have anything to do with anything.
Nothing to do with anything. I mean, the miracle of being, of perception, of the appearance of an you know, objectively appearing universe that's 14 billion years old, having birthed from, you know, the absurd notion of a Big Bang and then a post-inflation is absurd. And yet, the hysteria that plunders most all primates is based on the absurd assertion of relativists, or maybe even stringists, or quantum mechanicists, that this is something, that this has occurred. Occurred where prior to an event like the Big Bang, there was nothing, nowhere, waiting to birth itself. That is, if I dare say, with all due respect to the PhDs that are far more brilliant than I could ever hope to be, it's infantile. Stephen Hawking is an infant. I mean, you know, I have no credential, no authority. I can barely count to 10. So how could I possibly, you know, raise a question about the saluted histrionics of hundreds or thousands of years of, you know, human presumption about what this is or isn't? But I still believe that we have sufficient autonomy that we can perceive and penetrate the revelatory nature of experience and get a much clearer, if not more confident observation, a transcendent and liberated observation than any materialist could even dare imagine. And still we're seeing kind of a delightful convergence of the wild heart of the yogi and the profound intelligence espoused by, you could say, some scientific investigators. Yeah. They, you know, this convergence has been going on for, you could say, ever. Whether it was Bruno or Copernicus or Galileo or, you know, any of the giants of disturbing thought and discovery taking up the mantle of the wild heart of the yogi. What happens to our consciousness when we see that this is not about anything? That it's not a consequence of anything? That it's not a remnant permutation of anything? That it's just magnificently and disappearingly radiant in situ, dreaming in itself? And that the observation of that dreaming, while it may be a certain kind of madness, you know, to a persona, is the fruition of an unspeakable liberation. So if it wakes you up at night, you are one lucky son of a bitch.
And why it comes and goes lately, I haven't a clue.
Yeah, no, we can't say. I mean, as this pursues and stalks us and reveals itself in the peculiar uniqueness of each of our karma, each of our right receptivity, is not chartable. Mm. I mean, Prahlad, you know, from years ago would say that he was a beggar. He slept on the streets, you know, or under a hut if he could find one. And he said the Divine Mother would wake him up at, you know, 2:30 in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and she would teach him yoga. It's not like he went to, you know, a Iyengar's school to get a few postures in. You know? A Iyengar can go fuck himself. I can say that.
I think he did that last week.
I think he did that last week, yeah. He's gone. He's gone so I can insult him without repercussion. But all of these hatha yogis, you know, of great accomplishment, they can all go fuck themselves. I'll tell you why. Because my fucking guru was taught yoga by the Divine Mother at 3 o'clock in the morning through vision. You know, I mean, I don't have any skills. Don't look at me. I mean, the only thing I can put in my mouth is my foot.
How many times have you done that?
Yeah,
did I
can't seem to get it out. But I could say that I know someone, you know.
Who does it better?
Who does it better. Or new. But this is kind of fun, I think. You know, there's a kind of a madness which, why shouldn't we enjoy? Which is paying no homage, right, to anyone or anything. You know, I mean, there's no reason why we can't take a knee to the generosity and exquisiteness of Ramakrishna and also say, you know, whatever was going on with him was his problem. You can't not place yourself secondarily to anything or anyone because fuck you, fuck me, and fuck this. This is the unmitigated sacred divine. And I don't give a shit goddamn if, you know, any one of us reaches the pinnacle of, you know, nirvikalpa or salvikalpa samadhi. Fuck that noise. This right here in our blue collar and paltry degraded manner is fantastic. Yeah. I don't see any problem with taking a knee and being God at the same time. Where else are you going to go with this? You have to fulfill. You have to actualize. You have to stand in the unmitigated magnificence of your own subjective nature and have an encounter with absolute identity and no identity. Yeah. Nir Sagadatta can kiss my ass. Doesn't mean I don't love the guy. It's just, you know, taking the risk, maybe a little haughtily, admittedly haughtily, to break down the imaginary barrier between the sacred divine being other than your experience right now. Yeah. I would call that, you know, liberation of the species. Yeah. Freedom from the grief of separation. Freedom from, you know, the unrelenting grief and greed that most primates suffer and have no vehicle to feel it, articulate it, or mature beyond it. It's just another fucking soapbox.
Well, that's a nice, it's a good one.
Yeah. Now, hey, listen, you know. You know, if I'm not eating Viagra to get a Woody, at least I can rant.
That's right.
That's what old men do.
But I kind of feel that, you know, there's a mixture. There's always kind of like a blending going on there between the primate presentation and also the radiant reality that keeps, that's slipping in and slipping out.
Absolutely. Hardly a blending. It's the same goddamn thing.
Well.
Yeah. It's it. I mean, all samsara is made out of nirvana.
What else is there?
What the fuck else is this? All samsara, no matter how tragic and you know, disappointing and genocidal we maniacal fucking primates are, still all samsara is made from nirvana. It can't be otherwise. And the degree to which we might find ourselves identified with subjective nature, or identified with body-mind, or identified with phenomenal expression, the degree to which we are identified is not up to us. It's just organically, impersonally appearing. But some way, some strange way, we can become privy. We can become, in a sense, anointed by the observation that this is identifying with itself. And we can feel that firsthand. And in that way, this uncouples from its own delusional propensity. And the uncoupling from this delusional propensity awakens in our subjective experience.
Yeah.
And that's liberation. That's the fucking journey. And it ongoingly, you could say, matures or reveals. It's ongoingly creative and profound beyond measure. Since it's not made of anything and it has nothing to prove. I mean, how is it possible that, you know, we primates could begin to entertain the possibility of untethering from fear, from selfishness, from apprehension, from drama, from micromanaging the flora and fauna of our own consciousness, of trying, of the useless inebriation of trying to make reality one's bitch.
Come here, honey, you're going to do it my way.
Really? That's pretty much it. All we do is flip the bird to God all day long and go, yeah, no, 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 I got this. Really? You know, God looks down from the heavens and all he sees is everyone flipping him the bird. He's like, oh, man, goddamn humans. I gave them 5 digits, and all they do is say hello at the middle digit. Day in and day out. It's tough being God. I try to invite them, right? I try to invite them into a sublime dance of void, void delight. And all they do is flip me the bird and say, yeah, no, 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 no thanks. I got this. What's God to do?
Well, he's having fun fucking up what we thought of as our world right now.
Pretty much, yeah. He's like, oh, so, you know, I've had it with you guys flipping me the bird. The last time I drown all you fuckers. This time I think I'm going to let you die at the hands of your own stupidity.
Poison yourself, shoot one another.
Yeah, I promised I would not kill you by water again. This time I'll just let your own goddamn hubris and stupidity do it for me. And guess what? There won't be an ark.
Right.
It's kind of like God saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It's over, you fuckers. Fool me twice, shame on me. You're out of here.
No, wait. Was it the first thing that God said, let there be light? The last thing will be, I won.
Yeah, really. Really. The last thing we'll hear him say is, oh, alone again. Thank God.
Just start over.
Thank God I got that vermin out of my house. Really, I can hear God calling the exterminator now. God's overwhelmed by palmettos. Well, we may as well have a few laughs before the genocide comes this way. I don't think we're going to be going to FEMA camps after all. I mean, they're just going to gas us. They'll drop us where we stand. All right, that's enough. We're all going to dehydrate and pass out.
All right.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. We'll see you again real soon. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.